This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
As much as Donald Trump reviles what he calls the lamestream media, his presence in the White House has been an absolute boon to book publishers. The last 4 years have given us a wave of Trump books left and right, repertorial, and pontificating. Carlos Lozada, a Pulitzer Prize-winning critic at the Washington Post, assigned himself the perverse task of reading the entire Trump library as it emerges, from the vindictive tell-alls to the voluminous Mueller report. Now he's added to the pile with his critique of Trump studies called What Were We Thinking? And in it, Lozada tries to sort out whether these books actually matter at all. Carlos, so first question, when you were reading these stacks of Trump books and Trump-adjacent books, maybe 150 of them, there are so many. Did you ever say to yourself, is this a really good idea? What if I get hit by a bus and these are my last thoughts as a sentient being?
You know, what I try to do while I'm reading all these Trump books is that I sneak in, maybe like every four Trump books, I sneak in a novel or I sneak in an essay collection or something just to kind of keep my sanity going.
What set you off on this project?
Well, it started almost accidentally in 2015, actually, when Trump was first on the scene as a candidate and suddenly doing really well in the polls for the nomination. I decided just to read several of his own books, you know, The Art of the Deal and other memoirs and sort of self-help books that he has, just to see what I could learn about the guy. I thought it would be a very kind of one-time thing. But then suddenly he starts doing really well in primaries. So I start reading books about his supporters, right? Then he wins. So I start reading books about the resistance. And pretty soon I realized this was my beat at the Washington Post.
Now, one thing you note in your book, What Were We Thinking, is how similar some of the titles of these books are. There's The Death of Expertise, The Death of Truth, On Truth, Truth in Our Times, Post-Truth, The Truth Decay, Donald Trump and His Assault on Truth, and on and on and on.
You know, one thing also that struck me about the titles is how often they use his words, right? Think about some of the most well-known books about the Trump era. Fire and Fury, American Carnage, A Very Stable Genius, Rage, Fear, right? They put Trump at the very center of the story, which I think is kind of how he likes it.
Now, tell me, what are the categories of these books? You have broad categories that you write about.
Right. I kick off with all the books about the white working class and the heartland that really dominated the first year of the Trump presidency. And even the campaign, books like Hillbilly Elegy and White Trash and Strangers in Their Own Land. I also look at the books by and about conservatives. Right. And to see the different camps that the conservative movement has broken into during the Trump years. I look at all the Russia. Well, not all. I say all in these categories. There are so, so many out of about 1200 Trump books total that people have estimated. I've only done this for about 150 books. But I read several Russia books, several books about democracy, which has become obviously a big debate right now.
Was there any genre of book that surprised you or where you learned a great deal more than you expected? I suspect that some of these books seemed awfully familiar.
I'll tell you one surprise. Two books about the white working class that came out in 2018, just months apart, they both profiled the same guy in this Trump County in Pennsylvania. And I was, of course, I had read several books in between. So suddenly I'm reading the second one and I'm thinking, wait, this person's familiar. Why do I know this person, right? And then it hits me that I had read about him in a book called The Great Revolt. It had been published months earlier. And now he's reading about him in a book called The Forgotten.
Who was the guy and why was he so emblematic to these writers?
Well, the guy's name was Ed Harry, and he was a longtime Democrat who had even been a delegate to the 92 Democratic convention that nominated Bill Clinton. And he switched to Trump. But what was just delightful to read about Ed Harry is that depending on which book you were in, his motives for switching to Trump were completely different. So in The Great Revolt, he's this economic populist guy who worries about unfair trade deals and thinks the Democrats have forgotten the working man, and he doesn't like political dynasties like the Clintons or the Bushes. And in The Forgotten, the other book, he's a 9/11 truther who worries about George Soros funding Black Lives Matter. So he's sort of salt of the earth in one book and scorched earth in the next book. And I think he's the same guy. I doubt he changed a lot from when he spoke to one set of writers versus another. What really happened here is that these different qualities that the authors highlight seem to dovetail with their own interpretations of why Trump won the presidency. Even a single voter, let alone an entire demographic, can be politicized by authors, probably in good faith, interpreting things through their particular prisms.
Let's talk about Bob Woodward's book, Rage, which comes fast on the heels of Fury. It's the number one seller in America. It's gotten a ton of news coverage. What do you think about its strengths, or do you think there are weaknesses there as well?
I enjoyed reading Rage because Bob just gets a lot of information and he kind of lays it all out. And it's up to you to decide what to make of it. The sort of weird thing about Rage in particular, about this last book, is that it's two books in one. The part that's gotten a ton of attention has been the one-on-one conversations, the 17 or 18 interviews between Woodward and the president. And what did Trump know about COVID and when did he know it and what did he say and should Woodward have said something? That's really only half the book. The entire first half of the book is told through the eyes of key national security officials in the Trump administration, particularly James Mattis, the former defense secretary. To me, that just as a reader was far more interesting because you see how deeply concerned Mattis was about, for instance, the real risk of a nuclear confrontation with North Korea. And there's these very intense moments when you see, Mattis like sneaking off to go pray at the National Cathedral, right? Because he wants to have his mind ready so that he can respond instantly when something like that happens.
How do you feel about the standard critique of Bob Woodward's book and earlier books as well? Number one, that there's a system of source reward, as we say in journalism. In other words, those sources who talk to him get rewarded by being portrayed in the most heroic terms. And if you don't talk to him, you get punished.
I certainly understand that critique. Joan Didion laid out that critique most famously in a New York Review of Books essay in the 1990s.
Where she said that Bob Woodward basically has no analytical frame ever in these books, that it's pure information and that mental activity is not applied to it. There's no analysis whatsoever, which I think Woodward really cops to. But you also had this very unusual moment in the book at the end, in the epilogue, where Woodward, with great drama almost, concludes in a way that he never has, quote unquote, that he is not the man for the job, meaning that Trump is not the man for the presidency, to which I think a lot of readers might say, no kidding. We could have told you that 4 years ago. He's not the man for the job. Why is that a dramatic conclusion?
I think you see that his purely reporting instincts are hard to overpower, and they take a long time to get to the point where he can make a very definitive yet opinionated statement like he makes at the end of Rage, right? Those are the final words that he is not the right man for the job. And I think perhaps for someone like Woodward, who's covered a president since Nixon, you know, it takes him writing two books. It takes him amassing all the evidence to kind of give himself license to make a conclusion like that.
You know, I think the journalism that we publish at The New Yorker is heavily fact-checked and fair, but at the same time, it very often has a point of view. I've written with a point of view many times about Donald Trump, and I don't conceal that I think his presidency has been a disaster, an emergency on many levels and unprecedented on many levels. What should I read that I'm not likely to have read that would make me understand this, not necessarily change my mind, but understand the predicament more deeply?
What has helped me the most in the course of this reading is not necessarily finding like that one book that completely alters my worldview, for instance, but rather reading books that are not really about Trump, reading books that are about us, reading books that help me understand not just how we got to this moment, but how the fights that we're having now over immigration, over race, over identity and democracy, how those are ever present in the American experience. One of your own writers, Jill Lepore's book, These Truths, is an excellent look at precisely that.
Which is a history of the nation from its very beginnings, its pre-Columbian beginnings.
Right, but through the prism of those self-evident truths of the Declaration, right? And how our attempts and our inability to live up to them are a consistent feature of the American experience. To me, those have been the most helpful. Books like Carol Anderson's One Person, No Vote on the history of voter suppression. Books like Unmaking the Presidency by Susan Hennessy and Ben Wittes that don't just tell me all the awful things that Trump is doing in the White House, but show me where those norms that he is violating came from and what it can mean for them long term to be distorted. The best books about the Trump era are barely about Trump at all. They're about the country that he is remaking, unmaking, distorting.
Carlos Lozada, thanks so much.
Oh, thank you.
That was Carlos Lozada of The Washington Post. His new book is called What Were We Thinking?
WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.